Welcome to One Place, Many Voices. I'm your series host, Nanette Weiser, and this is supported by Heritage Village with a grant from Florida Humanities. And today we are going to be talking to two people who have been in Pinellas County for quite a long time and who have made such a difference in our community. I want to welcome David Warner, the former editor of Creative Loafing, an actor and a writer, and Larry Biddle, who has worked in development and supported so much of the arts and culture in this community. So welcome to the studio, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You guys have been here for a long time. 2004 to Tampa, is that right?
That's right.
And what year did you move back to St. Pete?
Well, we moved over in 2005. We were renting in 2004. Mm-hmm. Larry can tell you why we came down here. Well, it was sort of a joint thing, obviously.
But the real core is that we realized living in Tampa that everybody was having more fun. And if we wanted to have fun, we'd have to move or drive to Pinellas. So why not live here?
Absolutely. And, you know, I feel that way. I'm going to say this, folks, because this is a Pinellas County. I feel like nothing good happens in Tampa, but yes, it does. I mean, and David, you appear in some incredible shows. I mean, we've got Job Site there. We've got so many things going on. Music, the Straws. So I want to start off, first of all, with how the two of you came to be a team, and Larry, what you have been doing in development. Let's talk about your role in supporting arts and culture here in our community.
Okay. Where do you want to start? How did we get together?
Yeah, let's start with the love story.
I worked at Action AIDS in Philadelphia. I moved there from Washington, D.C., and I realized my friends who were dying of AIDS that I needed to do something about it. So by coincidence, there happened to be in Philadelphia the largest AIDS service organization that didn't have a development department. So they hired me, I created the department, and we raised many hundreds of thousands of dollars. At that agency, David was there as a volunteer because there used to be a time in which people living with AIDS were attached to a volunteer who was like a buddy, you know, a good friend, and they'd go to the movies together and do social things together. And David was one of them, and I admired him from many points of view. So we finally got together as a result of that. So that was pretty cool. That was great. And that was in 1992.
What brought you to Tampa Bay?
Larry Biddle, essentially, because he had moved on from working in nonprofits and had a period where he was working for in politics. And he had just finished working as the, what was your title?
Finance director for Howard Dean's campaign for president of the United States. And so we were living in Burlington. It was March. And
Burlington, Vermont.
Living in Vermont. And
Howard's.
It was cold as heck. Okay. And so the Dean campaign, as you all know, fell apart. And Betty Castor was hiring people down here. And so
really?
I got connected, and she's the reason that I came down. And in March, coming from Vermont to Florida is a really good idea. And so I...
And she was running for U.S. Senate at that point, yeah.
And so it was... and then I knew I had to convince David, who was a pretty staunch New Englander, to come to Florida. And so I rented a convertible. And in March, he
Not
came...
Not fair.
No, I came back. And it wasn't March. I think it was... later, April, maybe.
Whatever. Anyhow, I rented a convertible, and he drove around and drove across the Skyway Bridge and decided, this isn't so bad after all.
Yeah.
So we got here that way.
But it so happened that when I went back to Burlington, I was checking for jobs down here, and they were looking for a new editor at what was then the Weekly Planet.
Right.
And
lucky us.
And I had been the editor of the Philadelphia City Paper for many years, which was an alt weekly. And I thought, oh, well, I was just going to come down here and freelance, and was looking forward to that. But this looked like too good a fit and created Loafing Weekly Planet thought so too. So I came down here and became the editor in 2004.
One of the best editors in the country. And, you know, you oversaw award-winning coverage. You wrote about the 2012 Republican, 2016 Democratic conventions, Tampa and Philadelphia. I lived through your creative Loafing days. And you created the Best of the Bay, the Quarterly Neighborhood Guides, the Standalone Guides, the Ask the Locals, the LGBTQ plus. I mean, you were so ahead of this.
I can't say I created Best of the Bay, but I did. I did
you
was part of the big events that that they became, and it was. And I still do write for Creative Loafing on a freelance basis. In 2018, new owners came in and laid off all the people who had been there too long and were making too much money. So
and then you moved over to DuPont Registry, and
then
I left DuPont Registry to do something else, and you took over that.
Yes, you were my predecessor there, and that was a lot of fun. And I moved on to a few other things after that, but now I'm happily freelancing both as a writer, an editor, and an actor, and it's been pretty great.
Let's talk about, for a minute, how we've changed here. How has this community changed? How has coverage changed? Let's start with you, David, and then go to Larry.
How has coverage changed how has coverage changed me?
Yes. Oh. Either way, because it changes us.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty kind of astonishing how, for instance, arts coverage has gone the way of classified ads. It's people are connecting and giving their own opinions, which is fine. That's what's part of the democratization of the internet, is that you don't depend on people giving one view or one opinion about, say, a play. But now there's nothing. It's happening online. Some publications are still doing it. The Gabber in Gulfport is still reviewing shows. I ran into a guy an author who is the editor of the Bradenton Times and a former military man and also a theater nut. He was the only person that I could find who did a review of The Scarlet Letter at American Stage, which I was in earlier this year.
Oh, it's fabulous.
And it's like I said, there was no Times review, there was no
theater
coverage.
Reviews at the Times, but Bill DeYoung. Bill DeYoung is saying,
and let
catalyst.
Me just add that Bill DeYoung is the best. I mean,
the
he's
best.
He. If it weren't for Bill DeYoung, so many things would go uncovered, and the things that he does, interviews and previews, both on the radio and in print, on online. I mean, they do what theaters and all arts organizations love the most is a preview. That it's not an opinion about whether it was good or not. It's letting people know that things are happening. And, you know, the Artisan is doing that as well, the magazine, The Artisan. I think the fact that the daily newspaper
has no
to
music,
the extent that
no music
people
reviews.
Care about it. No music reviews.
No theater reviews.
Theater
no
reviews,
art reviews.
And very little arts coverage, period. Reviews or previews. That's a tragedy. And a lot of good people who used to work there are working elsewhere doing their stuff as an independent person. I mean, Maggie Duffy is a good example.
She's at Bay Magazine with
she's
us.
At
she
Bay
co-
Magazine.
She's coming on. So Radio St.
And
Pete
she's still
has
working
them.
For Creative Pinellas. Mm-hmm. Bless their hearts. And I don't know if your listeners know where we are?
No.
Oh.
That's okay. So.
Okay. That's relevant.
Yeah. But I love the fact that Creative Pinellas, that Maggie Duffy is curating a show with Heritage Village.
Yes.
The Juicy show that will open on the 30th at Pi.
Yeah.
David, you were president of Creative Pinellas.
I was president of the board. Right.
And I
worked with two amazing CEOs. First, Barbara Sinclair, who really put the place on the map. She really fought the good fight to make Creative Pinellas a force. And then the amazing Margaret Murray, who came on and has taken us through its evolution from having been defunded by the county to creating a whole new horizon for us, and doing incredibly creative things with the future. Because Creative Pinellas is still around. We're still making grants. We're still hosting exhibitions, as you just described. Yeah, but that's another example of how things have changed, I think, if you want to talk about change. I personally still think St. Pete and Pinellas are a haven in an otherwise an inhospitable state, at least inhospitable to open-mindedness and the arts and culture. To see that gradually change has been very disheartening. I mean, to see what happened with the kind of, I'm sorry, ignorant decision on the part of the Board of County Commissioners to defund it, it's slowly eroding some of the wonderful things about Pinellas, which are still all here. I mean, I think it's still a culturally rich and diverse county, unlike any other county in the state. And I think it still can attract people here for those reasons. And that's
it's changed. We are the arts coast. Yeah. And I want to talk about Greenlight Cinema for a little bit too, but you're absolutely right. The coverage has changed. There isn't coverage. The arts need coverage. Arts Alliance now with Helen French is a partner with Creative Pinellas. Certainly the city of St. Pete has made some grants available that helping Radio St. Pete, which is an all-volunteer nonprofit. And, you know, Arts Alive, you can listen to Bill DeYoung every Friday on Radio St. Pete. And Craig Pittman, and hopefully, David, you will come in and start doing some podcasts as well, because your coverage matters. So I want to talk a little bit about Greenlight Cinema, because this also speaks to the changing nature.
It is true.
And I don't think people know that it's a nonprofit now. So Larry,
yeah,
would you
it's
take
a nonprofit organization now. Yeah. So, but let me just set this up by saying that when we came here, there was, as I said, more fun in Pinellas County than there was in Hillsborough County. And we define fun as really being very involved as philanthropically, as well as ticket buyers and supportive of cultural organizations. So that has changed because the awareness, because we just talked about it, so I'm not going to repeat it, but it's so diminished that really is kind of hard to find. But I think at the same time, there is such richness in Pinellas County of cultural opportunities for people to participate. But you have to, you know, you have to work at it. You have to go fight and find it. So so I've raised many millions of dollars for social service organizations. And then I did the politics that we just talked about earlier, came down here to do some politics. And then decided that I'm getting old, so I should probably slow down a little bit here, and I have done that. And I found myself...
No, he hasn't really.
...looking at opportunities, and Greenlight, to me, was a rich place. It had something really that works well for the community and something unique. You know, one of the things that amazes me about it, Greenlight Cinema and the ratio between the number of seats you have and the number that are sold in the state of Florida is often, very often, number one in the entire state, which is pretty remarkable. So it is now a nonprofit organization, and so it provides me with the opportunity to help them look to how we can enhance it as a nonprofit organization. Nonprofits are very different than businesses. And regardless of the fact that they might be, quote unquote, run like a business, the sources of their revenue, their influence and impact is very, very different. And so Mike Haslett, who's been in the movie business for years, up in New England, as a matter of fact.
And concert business as well.
Yes. And so he came down and he and his wife Sue and decided that they would open up the cinema. And things came in, dropped in place. And so he's got this great organization with a great reputation. A famous, I can't say his name, well-known actor is coming to actually do a screening in the studio, I think, next week. So it has got a reputation that is quite fine. And it's very good movies, including some Academy Award nominees that we actually saw there this past year.
And home to the Sunscreen Film Festival this year. That was their home with the Green Light Lounge and kitchen
and the
next Jew- door.
The Jewish Film Festival.
Lots of film festivals.
And the TIGLIF, the LGBTQ festival. And so it's becoming a grounding for that kind of celebration that are specific to a population of people.
So as you see these high-rises going, now you live in Skyway Marina area, and Skyway Marina, of course, is incredible amount of beautiful, not affordable housing, but great housing, but great facilities, lots of things going on there. As you look at St. Petersburg and the audience there, and do you think that the people moving here will support the arts? Because certainly in the past, people didn't come from the beach to go to things. And, you know, Matthew McGee talks about this with Free Fall. I mean, what is your sense of how this new iteration of St. Petersburg will respond to the arts and culture community? Will they step up?
That's a really good question. I am not one of those people who looks at the high rises and saying, oh, no, it's not the St. Pete I remember. I kind of, I wish the architecture were better. But
we need an architectural critic too.
Yeah, really. But I don't feel like it has fundamentally changed the character of St. Pete. Well, it has, but not in a way that I think is necessarily negative. I mean, since I began working here, people have been complaining about. Since I began in 2004, it seemed like it was in. The endless complaint was the 600 block used to be wonderful and now it was taken over by corporate chains. And it actually hasn't been taken over by corporate chains, but things happen. People get displaced. Changes happen. But I do respond to that question about who are the people moving into those buildings that can afford to move into those buildings and afford these multi-million dollar condos in particular. Us renters, we're small potatoes compared to what people are paying to be in, say, 400 Central. But are they going to patronize the art? It's right under their nose. Will they go to American Stage? Will they go to the galleries? Are they like I was at one point? Northern or Northeastern snobs who only think they only go to shows in New York and they're here for the sunshine. I hope there are people coming in that are sophisticated and looking for really and discover that there's some brilliant work happening here in all those areas in film, in theater, in the arts, visual arts and other arts. And let's just cross our fingers.
I think it's going to be a big success. I totally believe that it's like good food. You know, when you have good food in a restaurant, you're going to be able to survive because you've got the essence of what it takes.
That's not happening either, though, sometimes. We just heard today that one of our favorite restaurants, Baba.
But we're in closed.
Which one?
Baba.
I love Baba.
Yeah,
where's
we
it going?
Do too.
It's going out of business.
I know. That's a shock.
Yeah, there's several that have. I think it's probably a matter of the economics of the world
What's
we're living in
right
now.
Yeah.
Food is expensive to ship.
And very, very difficult. I mean, it is getting very expensive to go out for dinner. But in any case, I think people will gravitate to what's working really well. I mean, look what I think has happened at Studio 620, for instance. It is filled with audiences of people who are coming to see art and productions that have not ever been around here before. And when you look around the room, there's a great diversity of people, and there's, in terms of age and race and interest, I think it's going to work fine. It'll just be a struggle, and we have to get through the circumstances of now, which I think will change soon, particularly after November. That's my political optimism, but in any case, I think that'll help quite a bit to create. But I do think we have the culture, and we have the opportunities for people to participate. It is a shift as to where people get what information, and so we all have to sort of pay it. What's actually happened, I think, is that word of mouth is becoming the highest level of currency.
Isn't that interesting that we're going back to grassroots, what we used to call, David?
Yeah.
Larry, grassroots marketing. You and I talked about this for Greenlight Cinema,
I
want something in my hand to pass out to everyone. Word of mouth is more, it's with AI taking over social media, it's distrusted. And I do think that there are trusted sources like David and you. So then when you go out and you say something, you're a key influencer.
Yes,
in person. I know that you're real, and I know that you have good taste.
Right.
And we have a lot of friends.
A lot of friends. So we will hopefully talk some more at another time, but I want to just touch on some of the things that we have been asking everyone at One Place, Many Voices, Pinellas County. As we approach America 250, what do you hope future generations understand about Pinellas County, St. Petersburg, the arts and culture, and what do you think that they should do to engage and create a legacy for the future?
I think nonprofits have a responsibility to engage with the new community. I can give you an exact example, for instance. I talked to the developers of 400 Central, and we have made a connection between Studio 620, which is a block away, and those fortunately wealthy folks that are buying the condominiums in that building. And so now there's a way in which the nonprofit has said to them, we'll come to you, we'll invite you, we'll involve you in our organization. So it's all about engagement and being opportunities for engagement that we all have to take advantage of right now.
Connecting.
Yes.
Connecting. We want real conversations and community connections. We believe that at Radio St. Pete we do this. I believe that, David, one of the things that you're doing in theater, and I think it's wonderful, is connecting people to stories like The Scarlet Letter Retold.
Yeah.
Right?
It was, and that was a great experience. And it was, I think for the audiences as well as for the cast, but definitely for us in the cast, it felt very close. And I think that's absolutely right. You can't be an art organization, a museum, a theater, cinema, and just expect that people will hear about you. You have to find ways in which, creative ways to involve them. And I think that's happening in a lot of levels at different places, they're connecting each other. And I think the one place where I think this is happening is in bookstores.
Yeah, Tombola Books.
Oh, yeah. Tombola Books, Book and Bottle, Oxford Exchange.
Yeah,
all
those
of them.
Those are places where people are gathering and people are in book clubs. And I think if you find your fellow readers, you've found a new community. And I hope
that's your tribe.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I was admittedly reluctant to move to Florida, because I had these notions of
you're
what Florida
you're Harvard, you're a Harvard grad.
Yeah.
Well,
there are many of us running. But I was a snob. And I...
In a good way.
And discovered Pinellas. We lived in Roser Park in St. Pete for a long time, which is a magical neighborhood and like nothing I expected to find. And there were so many things like that I didn't expect to find. you look at something like the Tampa Fringe Festival, you look at something like Studio 620, where Bob Devin Jones did a great job of connecting people, and Erica continues to do that. There are these...
Third places. They're kind of the third places.
They are third places. Places where you can discover your tribe. And I think that, I hope that future generations keep coming here to do that.
I love that. I want to thank Larry Biddle and David Warner for coming on to the podcast series. Folks, you can listen to this podcast series anytime, anywhere. You can download the new app for RadioSaintPete.com. We air the shows usually on Tuesday and Wednesday, but anytime, just go and search. I really want to say that talking about arts and culture, talking about nonprofits, I believe that America is defined by civic responsibility, community, and finding your tribe. So thank you both for being here today on this show.
Great to see you.
Thank you so much.
Folks, One Place, Many Voices is inspired by the Smithsonian's Many Voices, One Nation exhibit coming this summer to Heritage Village on July 11th. We're going to be celebrating the All-American Bash. It's going to be so much fun with Cassie Jean and the Fireflies. We're going to be reading the Declaration of Independence. I hope you guys will come up on stage and join us. And more importantly, folks, from 11 to 3 that day, we're going to have a Doggy Patriotic Parade, and we are going to create a third place in Heritage Village that celebrates everything that is good in America and ignore anything that is bad. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being on the show today.
Oh, pleasure.
Thank you.